Morning, everybody, and welcome to the Coachella Valley Conservation Commission for Thursday, May 13th, 2021. This is telephonic and virtual again under the state order of emergency due to the pandemic. We will still accept call-ins for and written public comments, which we have been doing for past year. But with that, let's go ahead and start with the roll call, please. Who is on? Is it
Tricia? Tricia.
Yes. Oh, hi there. Great.
Thank you, Chair Evans. Cathedral City?
Cradle Lamb here.
Coachella? Desert Hot Springs?
Gary Gardner, present.
Indian Wells?
Donna Griffith, present.
Indio? La Quinta?
Linda Evans, present.
Palm Desert?
Kathleen Kelly here for Palm Desert.
Palm Springs?
Present.
Rancho Mirage?
Richard Kite, Rancho Mirage.
Riverside District 1.
Glenn Miller, present.
Riverside District 2.
Kathleen Fitzpatrick, present.
Riverside District 3.
Jan Harnick, here.
Riverside District 4.
Looks like Supervisor Perez is on mute.
We have him in. I'm going to mark him present.
Okay.
Riverside District 5.
Have a good day.
Okay, take care. Hi, I'm in. Sorry.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you. Coachella Valley Water District. Imperial Irrigation District.
Good morning. Alex Cardenas, present.
Mission Springs Water District.
Hi, good morning. Nancy Wright, present.
We have a quorum.
Excellent. Very good. At this time, we'll move to public comments on agenda items. This is a reminder that we don't take action on public comment items, and we'll do, I don't know if we have requests to speak for non-agenda items, but just a reminder that attendees can either raise their hand if they're on the Zoom or press star 9 if they'd like to make a public comment. And Tricia, do we have anybody that's requested to speak at this point?
We did not receive any public comment via email, and I do not see any hands raised at this time.
Okay, well, we'll continue to monitor that as the discussion goes on. And if we have anybody, then we'll call upon them accordingly. Commission chair and director announcements. Any commission members have anything that they'd like to share at this time? No? Okay, very good. Any staff, lead staff, Katie, Tom?
Yeah, Mayor, I just want to update people on AB 1500. This is the, I like to say water bond, it's actually called Safe Drinking Water, Wildlife Prevention, Drought Preparation, Flood Protection, Extreme Heat Mitigation, and Workforce Development Bond Act of 2022. Assemblyman Garcia is the author. It's a $7 billion bond amount, and we are tracking it because it certainly includes resources for the Salton Sea, up to $240 million, $30 million of which would go to the Salton Sea Authority. And the Coachella Valley Mountains Conservancy would receive up to $20 million associated with, again, state conservancy funding. So we are tracking that and providing any information to the assemblyman that he needs to move Salton Sea and conservancy efforts forward. That's the extent of my report.
All right. And I just want to add with the, I think it's with Greater Coachella Valley Chamber of Commerce. He is, Assemblyman Garcia is going to be a guest speaker regarding topic. I'm looking for it on my, it'll be on Thursday, May 27th to noon. It's actually the Well 2021 virtual conference. It's not a chamber event. And it's water jobs in a post-COVID California economy. And I believe that part of his legislation piece will be covered during that. So I'm happy to forward that to CVAG staff to share with the rest of the commission if that's of interest of anybody. I've registered for that. I don't know at what point he'll be speaking, but hopefully we'll be able to put a little bit out there regarding Salton Sea and some of the other concerns that we have out here relative to the commission work and the next commission work that we're doing. So, okay, thank you very much, Tom. Number 5 is our consent calendar. We have 2 items, the April 8th meeting minutes, as well as the adoption of policy number 21-01, which renames our per diem policy and stipend, remains our per diem policy to be a stipend and increases that to $100 for these meetings. I don't know if you have any questions or discussion regarding that came up through our finance administrative committee after our finance director had been assessing some of the other stipends that were there versus per diems and what that means to be employed versus not employed and some of the California laws. But if there's no questions or discussion, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion, Mayor Evans.
And that would be Alex Cardenas, IID, making the motion.
I'll second that.
And Gary Gardner, Desert Hot Springs, making the second. All right, all those in favor, please say ayes, wiggle some fingers.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? Seeing none, that motion passes unanimously. Thank you. We'll move on to our item six discussion action section. And we've got a few presentations to do today. The first is technical assistance agreement for desert tortoise monitoring and genetic analysis. And is KD doing this, it looks like?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the commission. I am here today to give you a little bit of background on our desert tortoise monitoring and genetic analysis. And I also wanted to just talk about the grant and what we do out there. And next slide, please. There we go. So for a little bit of background, the orange dots here in and out of the MSHGP area, those are our historic points for tortoises found throughout Joshua Tree and the Coachella Valley. And we have, in the past, in 2015 and 2017, CVCC received a local assistance grant from California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And the light blue dots are actually when we had USGS go out and sample in the desert tortoise and linkage area to understand more about the tortoises in the eastern Coachella Valley, because a lot of work had been done in the western Coachella Valley, but not so much in the eastern area. And then the dark blue dots, CVCC had funded USGS to expand the search area south of the 10 and into the Shavers Wash and the Orocopia Mountains. And while they were out there, they collected blood samples obtained from the tortoises and put those in for analysis of genetic relationships and looked at population estimates for us. Those samples were taken back to the lab and compared to samples taken in the western Coachella Valley up there in the whitewater area. And it was found that those tortoises had a stronger genetic affinity to the ones in the Orocopia Mountains than the ones up in the Western Mojave and the Mojave Desert, which is interesting. So we published those results in the Frontiers of Biogeography last year, and they're also in the CVMSHCP annual report. So you can find that on our website. And so this round of population monitoring is really concerned about what's going on in that linkage area between the Orocopia Mountains in the eastern end and the western populations of the MSHGP. And so we know that we get reports that there are scattered observations throughout the Indio, well, the Sky Valley area and up into like West and Mission Creek and that area. But we're not quite sure where those populations actually exist or if they're just individual tortoises. And so the population connectivity and the linkage study is needed so that we can understand a bit more about that. And in addition, over here in La Quinta and the Santa Rosas, pretty much nothing is known about the ecology of those tortoises, you know, and what's going on with their population over there. So we're looking at, hopefully, next slide, please. This is Dr. Jeff Levitch, and he is our primary biologist on the tortoise monitoring team. He's with the U.S. Geological Survey Southwest Biological Science Center, and he's been researching tortoises out here for about 30 years. And he's the one who will be collecting the genetic material, the blood samples from the tortoises. Each tortoise that he finds has been notched, and some of these tortoises were notched in the early 90s, so they're pretty interesting to find a tortoise that you found 30 years ago and still see it out there. On the right hand, you can kind of see the notches there at the edge of the shell and in the back by its his hind foot. And those notches have a code. And Dr. Levitch has a book that has recorded all of those tortoises over time. Next slide, please. So at the January meeting, we had the CVCC approved a grant from the local assistance grant from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife again. This one was for $90,672. And it was helping us try to determine what those linkages are. So, and what we do when we're out there, what the biologists do when they're out there, because I don't handle the tortoises, I just follow them around usually and help to look for sign. But they they're able to fit some tortoises with transmitters, and those tortoises lead you to other tortoises. And those get notched, if not a transmitter themselves. So the population kind of introduces us to other individuals of the population, and they're tracked through radio telemetry. GPS doesn't work very good, unfortunately, because they go underground. But once they're found at their burrows or wandering along with the transmitter on, they're processed, and by that I mean they're weighed, and we look at how dehydrated they are, their health, and all kinds of things. So next slide, please. One of the many things that this study will do is help us determine other factors that we're concerned about as well. And up in the top left corner, you'll see that there's a carapace of a tortoise. We have had a lot of mortality, especially in lower elevations, seeing more skewed towards the female tortoises, which we're very concerned about. Most of this study will be higher up in the ridges. So we're on the rim of the valley, on the north side in the Santa Rosa Mountains. So we want to see if we're still seeing a lot of mortality up there. Also, we look for burrows. When we're out there, we have volunteers or others who would like to come help us look for sign. Signs would be burrows or scat, and that helps us find tortoises. Not necessarily, it's a lot of searching. The USGS has done a lot of searching over many, many kilometers for tortoises. So there's an opportunity to help for the public to help with that part, finding the sign. And then once Jeff and his team find the tortoises, they're able to, like I said, process them. And one of the things they do is X-radiograph the females to determine how many clutches of eggs they might have. And then we're really concerned about the demographics in terms of, we have the young ones, as you can see on the right, those are tiny little hatchling tortoises, and we're really concerned with how they're recruited into the population. So we tend to see hatchlings, and then adult or very mature tortoises. Like I said, the ones that were notched back in the 90s or even in the 2000s, and we seem to be missing in some of our MSHCP areas the middle, the recruitment area, so the 10-year-olds and the 20-year-olds, and even younger than that. So our tortoises tend to be skewed to an older population, and so we're looking for young ones, and also the young adults, I guess you would say. Next slide, please.
Katie, if I can interrupt just real quickly, I just want to make a note for the record that Elaine Holmes, mayor of Indio, is on via phone. She's driving, so I want to give her attendance credit for that. Thank you.
So for this project, if approved by the commission, it would start in May and also go on through March 30th, 2023. The contract actually is through June 30th, and that's the reason for that is USGS has to have all of their reports reviewed So I've given time for that before they submit the final to us. And so this final picture is a picture of the apple fire. And one of the other concerns that we have, of course, is that the habitat in the Western MSHCP is being overrun by certain invasive species, which is increasing fire frequency. And in the yellow blocks on the left-hand side, those are the areas that were under evacuation warning for the apple fire. This went all the way up into the 62 in Morongo Valley. And a lot of that is critical tortoise habitat. But on the right-hand side, it's a little hard to see, but you can kind of see the fuzzy grasses between the shrubs. Those Mediterranean grasses are not native, and they help to carry fires through desert ecosystems, which would otherwise be fire resistant because the shrubs would be pretty far apart. So if we can do targeted management in some of these areas, we're looking at working with the BLM and others to see how we can control some of these grasses, especially in our highest density tortoise population. And with that, the recommendation is in front of you, and I'd be happy to take any questions for the commission.
Great, thank you, Katie. Questions for Katie on this? I actually have one, and maybe this is a question between the turtles versus the tortoise. We at the Civic Center Park in Lincolnton, there are several creatures that come into the lake, go out of the lake, lay eggs outside the lake, go back into the lake, turtles. I don't know if they're turtles or tortoises. And then what about the people that actually have tortoises as pets? Is there a benefit to be able to study them in terms of their age or what have you, if people have them? Because I literally saw somebody with a very large tortoise walking along the Fritz Burns Park sidewalk and had to do a double take in the roundabout to watch this enormous, him guiding the sidewalk. So is there any relevance to domesticated turtles, tortoises, and how they might play a role? Or is this clearly all the free living critters out in the wilderness there?
Well, we do want to make sure that we keep the domestic tortoises away from the wild tortoises because they can carry disease back to the wild population. Mm-hmm. This is why when a tortoise is domesticated, we beg them, please do not return it back to the wild. And so that's what, I mean, captive tortoises have been studied pretty regularly. The big tortoise you saw was probably an African sulcata. They get really, really large. Ours don't really get that large. They get about this big, even at 50, 60 years old. So they're a little different, but those captive tortoises do escape. And so one of the questions that we have with the genetic studies is if some of these tortoises were dropped off or escaped from some of our habitations. This is certainly the case, or they've seen a partial deal with that in Anza Borrego. So those tortoises were introduced to the area and they were brought across from the other side of the Coachella Valley. So we do know a little bit about them. And so this genetics will help us answer some of those questions. Is this a natural population? Mm-hmm. And it certainly looks like the one in Whitewater has traversed itself across the desert tortoise linkage area and inhabited that area for some time. So those are all good questions. And we do study captive tortoises.
And for the new members, perhaps you can share just briefly the cool little tortoise center that exists and the structure that was built. Is that in the DHS? What area is that? I thought, is it Whitewater or DHS? Wasn't there some like tortoise preservation area that we had a presentation on once some time ago?
I think that one is up by Las Vegas near the border. And that's where they had a bunch of hatchlings that were taken out, and they tried to see how those hatchlings would adapt to their habitat when you drop them in an area. And unfortunately, that doesn't seem to work a lot. We were trying to find better ways to introduce tortoises to new areas or to augment the population, as we have been doing with the Peninsular Bighorn Sheep back in, for a while. And so that is, that's an ongoing research issue, but that yeah, that site was built out, I believe, by the border.
Okay. So,
cool. All right. It is a really cool place to go.
Thanks. Any other questions or comments? Otherwise, yes, Kathleen from Palm Desert.
Hi, thanks. The absence of the young adults suggests that the hatchlings are not surviving.
Right.
So do we believe that that's a function of disease or predators or some combination? And what is the strategy for addressing that, and who's doing it?
So currently, USGS is trying to study that demographics and understand it a little bit more. There has been some hypotheses about what is going on out there. Maybe there is a lack of nutrients. This is particularly in the Mesa area by Whitewater. Or maybe the young are foraging on those grasses, and very much like our Peninsular Bighorn Sheep, may not be getting all of the nutrients that they need from the grass. And so doing a more intensive investigation of that population and trying to find those young adults is extremely important, but also learning more about that nutrient requirement and the control of those non-native grasses could be especially you know, one of those things that help the population along. We don't really know. I mean, in terms of habitat, this seems to be happening throughout the Mojave and Colorado genetic units. We've seen a crash in tortoise populations over the last few decades. And part of that could be the warming aspect, and it could be that they are remnants of a much cooler climate. And so there's a lot of hypotheses about what is happening with the populations. And right now we're just trying to get a handle on what's out there and what we need to do next. So that's the first step. And then the next step would be to try to control whatever aspects might be hindering recruitment here.
Good question.
Excellent question.
Okay. All right. We've got a recommendation before us for the next 2 years for Mount just under $138,000. Is there a motion to approve?
So move, Madam Chair.
That sounds
second.
Like Supervisor Perez, 4th District, Perez. And second by
second Captain Fitzpatrick. District
second,
2.
Second District 2. Thank you. All those in favor, please say aye. I wiggle some fingers. Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Seeing none, do we have to do a roll call with Elaine on the phone? Elaine, if you're able to unmute to say yes or no to item A, which is our analysis of the tortoise and continuation technical assistance agreement. I'm not sure if she's looking to find an unmute. Maybe we put her as an abstain. Is that appropriate? Okay, and then motion will pass.
I think she's
okay. I'm here. I'm trying to figure this process out by phone, and I support it. Absolutely. Aye.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much, Elaine. Appreciate it. All right. So it sounds like motion passes unanimously. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Move on to item 6B, which is the acquisition of 4 parcels in the Upper Mission Creek, Big Morongo Canyon, Highway 111, I-10, and Mecca Hills, Orcopia Mountains Conservation Area. Jim is on for this one. Thanks, everyone. The slides.
Good morning, commissioners. There are 4 parcels in 3 conservation areas. If you have the next slide, please. Star should come up. There it is. Over on the west end of the valley, there's parcels in Palm Springs and in Desert Hot Springs. If you go to the next slide, we can zoom in a bit. On the left, that's in the Highway 111 I-10 conservation area. in the city of Palm Springs off of Tipton Road. That's between the I-10 and 111 as you come into town. It is a parcel that's important as a sand source. It provides fringe-toed lizard and other species, protected species habitats. It's also important as part of the whitewater floodplain that supports the aquifer and ultimately salt and seas health. To the right in the city of Desert Hot Springs, that would be roughly at Mission Lakes and Indian Canyon, east of 62. It's in the greater Mission Creek watershed. It is a part of a corridor that we've been concentrating on since the inception of the plan, as you know. Like the prior parcel, it's an important sand transport area. It supports the original fringe-toed lizard preserve. It's habitat for the burrowing owl and Jerusalem cricket, also important for aquifer health. Moving to the East Valley in the next slide, the star will come up magically. I didn't, but we're over, this is the between I-10 and Bradshaw Road after it turns down and goes back to the west. Those two parcels outlined in red down there. This is the Mecca Hills Oracopia conservation area. It's important as a wildlife corridor and linkage for various species. It supports desert scrub natural communities and several protected bird species. All of them, these two parcels and the prior two, are adjacent to current CBCC holdings, so it makes for ease of management. The total price for all of these four parcels is $130,300. We'll have to pay about $12,000 in transaction costs. For the parcel in Palm Springs, it's about $5,000 an acre. For the parcel in Desert Hot Springs, it's about $6,500 an acre, and those are consistent with what we've been getting. They reflect the relative value of those parcels for commercial use. The property value in the Mecca Oracopia area is $262 an acre, only $262. Obviously, it's pretty remote, so it's not very valuable or very expensive, but it's obviously still good habitat. There is sufficient money in the land acquisition fund. And so with that, staff recommends approval of resolution 21-004 to acquire the four parcels. I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Jim. Questions for Jim about any of the proposed acquisitions? Well, that's easy. Seeing none, we'll entertain a motion.
I move we purchase the parcels as outlined in the resolution.
Desert Hot Spring, Gary Gardner makes the motion.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Donna Griffith, Indian Wells. Second, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Thank you. Elaine included from Indio on the phone. Anybody opposed? Abstain? Seeing none, motion carries unanimously. Very good. Okay. And let's move on to, oh, yay, my favorite topic. on the Lakita Peninsular Bighorn Sheep Fence. Katie, we're going to have to arrange, I'll have to check council agendas because I want you to come present this to La Quinta, but we want to make sure we give our residents enough advance notice. So okay. I'll turn it over to you. And boy, Joe's here. This is big news.
My favorite subject too. Thank you, Mayor Evans. So we do have some good news finally. And if we could advance to the next slide, please. As we've been reporting, we've been working very much so with the PGA West and the Homeowners Association. And these photographs are actually provided to me by the Homeowners Association, some of the recent activity of the bighorn sheep. So I guess clearly the problem continues to get more challenging for the residents. And I think they've seen even more so than in the past. We have a problem that we need to resolve. And I think that's kind of helped us move this project forward. There is a photograph here of a sheep in the canal as well. And there have been more recently a drowning of a young lamb a couple of months ago. So the need for this project, is very much apparent. And if I could have the next slide, please. As you've heard us talk about many times, the solution has been to construct a fence. So this is the route. And if you could have just click the button, please, to highlight the area that we're focused on for this particular discussion Erica, if you could just click, so the circle, there we go, thank you. The area that we're focused on is the property shown in the red circle, which is property owned by PGA West, that is pretty much essential to our route. And there has been, as you can see, the adjacency of PGA West area to the surrounding hillsides, some significant concerns from property owners about the impact of fence being constructed on their views. Especially those whose properties face right out onto the beautiful mountains. So over the months, we've been going back and forth. There was another alternative that was identified in the EIR that the folks at PGA West were really pressing for. We convinced them, I think, that that would not only be more expensive, but take a lot more time. And the problem that we're seeing with sheep in the urban neighborhoods would only get worse. So we finally, I will say, I wish I thought of this sooner. If I could have the next slide, please. And we thought, well, let's just show them exactly what that fence is going to look like. So this is the view. Actually, this is an aerial view. But Erica, if you could click, please. We're going to just show you. We thought, well, let's just show them exactly. Well, actually, if you could go back. I'm sorry. That I just wanted to identify, and there should be, it's not obvious here, but the photo that I'm going to show you, we said, well, let's take a look and let them see what the fence will actually look like. So this is the slope. It's a pretty rugged slope, and we did identify a route that would go up over the slope. It's toward the west there. You can see kind of a little yellow square. And the next image I'm going to show you was taken by me standing right at the edge of the canal. So what you see here is, this was a sort of find the fence opportunity, but if you can see in the yellow circle, we put up a fence panel. I want to appreciate that we were actually able to borrow the materials from Silver Rock. There was some old stash of the Silver Rock fence, so this is the same material. And as you can see, I think it's really very difficult. If I didn't have that yellow circle and blue arrow there, I think you'd have a difficult time seeing the fence. And this was really, we put up fence posts and done different things, but this was really the clincher. We met out there with PGA West a few weeks ago, and I think they all said, wow, you know, we really, you can hardly find that fence. The vertical posts are visible if you're really looking. And so we agreed with them that we would work to apply some paint once they get in place, because you can see the background varies from kind of chocolate brown to this sort of, depending on whether it's got the desert varnish or whether it's exposed granite. The coloration is different, but the result of the test panel was that they agreed to go forward with the route that we've been working on for all these years. That was very good news. The only request they had was they want to be involved in testing the paint and being out there when we're doing that paint application. So our intent would be, well, first step, explain this and I'll come to the next steps. Our intent would be to go ahead once we get construction underway to put the posts up. That's the first step before the actual fence material, the chain link fabric, goes in. And then at that time, we can work with the homeowners, and they would have some representatives who want to be out there checking to make sure the coloration matches. These are particularly individuals who live there and have this as their view. So we can make that happen. And I think everybody will be satisfied that it's really going to be almost disappear into the background. And that was good news. So I guess next slide, please. Just in terms of next steps, what we're doing now is working with PGA West owners on finalizing an agreement. Now, this is actually an agreement that we were very close to finalizing back in, December.
Pre-pandemic, right?
Yeah, December of 2019. And so I just heard yesterday from Ben Dobbs, the executive director at PGA West, that he's got that document back from their legal counsel. And hopefully in the very near future, we can have our legal counsel review it, which he's pretty much already done. The only change that I'm aware of is this one that would provide for the individuals from the HOA to kind of work with us on the coloration. So once that step is done and we can get the agreement signed, then we would work to complete construction plans. It is a very busy time in the construction industry, as many of you know, so we may be a little bit delayed in getting that consultant going, but they had given us an estimate of about 2 months. They have to do some aerial flyovers and prepare detailed plans that would satisfy the Coachella Valley Water District and the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, so that will be our next step. And hopefully we already have the agreements in process, basically ready to go pending completion of those construction plans. So with that, we're hopeful that we can get the fence started by summer. Most likely the first step would be over in the Lake Kaweah area where construction installers could work during the summer months because they're going to be near their vehicles and water and resources, and probably in the fall do the heavy slope. Now, time-wise, in terms of how long this will take is a difficult question, especially dealing with that steep slope, because we don't know how long it's going to take. But once we get into it, we'll have a better idea of the overall plan. So with that, the recommendation for you today is that you authorize the executive director to negotiate and execute an agreement with PGA West for use of the lands for completion of the fence. And then once we have the construction plans in place, we would issue a notice to proceed with construction. And I do want to actually acknowledge the support and patience that you have all had in getting us to this point. And in particular, actually acknowledge our fence contractor, Tim McEwen and his team. They've been extremely helpful to us all along in putting up this panel. It's mentioned in the fiscal analysis that we were able to purchase the fence materials. We actually ordered them some time ago. And the good news about that was with the prices of steel and fence materials now increasing significantly, that left us actually in a much better shape. So that was good to hear that we were able to preserve prices that were negotiated and approved by you in 2020, in February of 2020. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you, Katie. And just a note for the record, at 11 o'clock, Supervisor Hewitt, District 5, joint meeting. And I, before I call upon Gary, I want to say how appreciative we are. I am, Katie, of the diligence and passion that you've continued to display during this. I know the, well, you live in La Quinta, you know the ups and downs of homeowners everywhere and residents and feedback. And I know PGA West, we've had our share with rentals and the, when they're collective as a voice, it's a lot of residents and a lot of homes and a lot of influence. And but you stayed with it and you provided options and alternatives and information. And, you know, we're just one step closer to meeting that demand that was made by Fish and Wildlife some years ago in that next phase of what we don't own as a city, but clearly was in within the city boundary. So I just want to say and congratulate you and the work that you and your team have done, because I know that you've been spearheading this since the very beginning and trying to find the best solution possible. So thank you for that.
Great. Thanks.
Tom, are you giving a thumbs up? Is that every okay? I see thumbs up. All right, we'll go to questions and comments. Gary from Desert Hot Springs. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll echo your sentiments. I've followed this for some time and I know what a negotiation process it's been for you. And I can imagine how frustrating it may have been at times. I have one quick question, and it's you mentioned that we're now going to paint the posts various different colors depending on the rocks going up the mountain. Do you have a cost estimate on how much more that's going to be rather than just go with a solid universal color that blends in? When your picture was remarkable, you know, if you're absolutely right, if we hadn't circled and arrowed it and picture on the back with the words explaining what everything is, it we would have never noticed it.
Yes, Councilmember Gardner, I would anticipate it to be probably fairly insignificant cost. It would be some labor. There's actually the only portion of the fence that would need to be painted is the section that's lower. It's about 500 feet because once it gets to a certain point in the terrain, the fence kind of turns a corner, if you will basically disappear. So we're probably talking about some spray paint, and I don't think all the posts will need to be painted. It's just some of those that are in that more sort of gray. The coloration of the fence was really dyed to match, if you will, based on what Silver Rock's experience was, to match that chocolate brown, you know, the desert varnish color. That so it's really only in those areas where there's kind of that gray green exposed granite where we need to paint. I can get an estimate, but I'd expect it to be, I'm going to guess at the most a couple $1,000 more. Should be insignificant.
Yeah. My concern was if it was a major cost or an insignificant one, but and when you mentioned that you would have representatives from the homeowners out there, I'm had a flash in my head of a bunch of decorators with swatch out there trying to match each fence post to every rock that was behind it. So, no, but good job, Katie. I hope we can finally get this one done.
Yes. I suspect that once they spend a day out there looking at paint colors, it'll be done and they'll be fine. Whatever. Go for it.
Other questions or comments?
Congratulations, Linda.
Well, I congratulate Kate. Well, can we congratulations to all of us, I guess. I would say that I'm proud to look at some of those photos because clearly, you know, that old study from 2010 said we've got about 10 bighorn sheep in that area. Well, clearly there's, you know, there's been some reproduction going on.
50.
The photos continue to grow in size and we know that there's several that don't come down based on the patterns and the dots that we look at. There are several herds that do not come down into the residential areas. So I'm feeling good about the fact that we're not. I was concerned initially of just putting up a fence and not having water or food. And I guess that's the next thing is what have we done for water food sources, if any, or because of how we're still positioning this, it's that we're not locking them in any pattern at this point. They still have places to roam to get food and water, correct, Kate? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think, Chair Evans, you do make a point that the sheep actually have done well in terms of reproduction, but at the same time, they experience more hazards and more dangers in that environment. And obviously for the homeowners, there's an ongoing challenge. So the best place for them to be is in the natural environment. And we will be working with the water district to install some water sources. We'll be meeting with that on that subject next week.
Richard, I'm so glad that you're still on the commission that you can see this come to fruition.
We never thought we were going to get there, but we still got more to go.
That's right. That's true. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, we do need to approve the agreement between PGA West for the use of lands.
Approval.
Thank you, Richard Kite. Rancho Mirage makes the motion.
Second.
We got a couple seconds. Desert Hot Springs or Kathleen representing District 2. All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
I hear Elaine also said aye verbally from the car. Any opposition? Thank you, Alex. All right, seeing none, no abstentions, the motion passes unanimously. Woohoo! All right.
Thank you.
All right, item D is the CVAG and CVCC agreement for administration of the Coachella Valley Multi-Species Habitat Conservation Plan. Katie's up on this as well.
Great, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. So I think at the beginning when we started this whole effort, we knew it was going to work out well and be successful, but perhaps maybe we didn't realize how successful. And I think this actual request kind of recognizes a successful partnership. The request before you is that we amend the CVAG-CVCC agreement for administration of the multiple species plan and to actually bump that amount up slightly. And I'll give you some quick background and then you can ask questions. As noted in the staff report, since the plan was installed in 2008, there's been a relationship between CVAG and CVCC. And for new members, CVAG was the lead on the entire effort to get the multiple species plan approved. And when that happened, actually before 2008, when the permits were issued, the CVCC was created. And of course, CVCC does have some additional members and our water districts and others that are members of different from the CVAG executive committee. But anyway, through that effort, we've had some great success, a tremendous amount of land acquisition with your guidance and support, land management, and as you've heard, some great monitoring programs like Kathleen KD spoke about earlier. So over the years, we've really had that success, and there was this agreement and actually notice in the multiple species plan that over 5-year increments, there would be this agreement between CVAG and CVCC. That agreement, of course, has been renewed since 2008. And I just wanted to note, I think the arrangement has worked very well. The idea was to try to make cost efficiency and kind of limit the development of a bureaucracy, if you will. And so we've been successful in that. And more recently, as noted in your staff report, the Riverside Conservation Authority, which manages the Western Riverside Multiple Species Plan, has actually come under the direction of RCTC and following a similar model. The RCA staff is now working under RCTC with Ann Mayer as the executive director in a similar model to what happens here with CVAG, CVTC, and Tom's direction. So we're pleased to see that our good work and our good efforts have been recognized. So basically, this request is in describing, there's a summary in your agenda packet of the payments that are made by CVCC to CVAG on an annual basis. And working with our budget this year, which you will be, our finance committee will be reviewing later this month, and you'll be considering in June, we identified the increasing costs in particular of our land management. And you've been hearing about some of the challenges that we have with fencing and additional acreage. We now own over 13,000 acres and the costs of management are increasing. So in recognition of that, our budget this year will propose in part an additional staff member, a land management assistant or coordinator to help us make sure that fences are getting fixed and gates are being installed. And as you heard about a couple of months ago, we have a really great new database and a group of volunteers that are helping us to basically establish all of our assets and put them into a database. And those volunteers are out in these weeks making that forward. So this individual, if it was approved by the CVCC, would help with a lot of different tasks, take some of the load off Kathleen. So that is part of the recommendation. So in general, our current maximum amount that CVAG could bill CVCC is $750,000. As it turns out, we are very close to that amount this year. So we are recommending that the commission authorize an increase to $850,000. We don't anticipate that all of that would be used. The billing from CVAG is based on time and materials, which does include a percentage of overhead, and including office space and administration and copying and so forth. Your agenda packet shows an approximate estimation based on actual percentages of time spent. KD is our only employee who works full-time on the multiple species plan, and this new land acquisition assistant position would also be 100%. But I think it's been successful. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any question. The staff recommendation is authorizing the chair to execute amendment number 3, which would increase the annual maximum amount for billing from CVAG to CVCC to $850,000.
Great, thank you. I must say, just based on our fact that we've recently approved audits through this commission as well as CVAG, the attention to detail, the ability to track the time for each of the areas of responsibility in our CVAG is impressive, to say the least. And I can't believe we've been functioning so long without an increase like this for some time. So questions for Katie on the proposed increase or allocation of staff? Seeing none, yes?
Councilmember Woods does have his
hand raised. I see Dennis, yes, with his hand up. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a question. The initial agreement that established the CVCC, did it have a cap on the amount that could be spent for human resources?
Yes. Initially, with the first agreement between CVAG and CVCC, the cap was $700,000. And that was actually held at that point until we amended it in 2018, I think it was, and bumped it up to $750,000. And this year, we anticipate actually the invoice would be for this current fiscal year would probably be right about that amount.
So it's not a percentage. It was just actually amount that was approved.
Correct.
Okay. And then the new person that you're bringing on to help with land use management, just curious, are we overburdened right now? I'm just curious why this person's needed versus we've been operating without this other person.
We have currently one staff person, KD Kathleen, who handles both monitoring and management. And the number of acres that CVCC owns continues to increase. This year, we've acquired about over 2,000 acres. And in particular, perhaps in part with the COVID situation, we've seen a lot more activity in terms of damage and vandalism and fence materials being stolen and those kinds of impacts. And we up to this time have had a contract arrangement for someone to install fences, but I think in order to adequately manage our lands and make sure that dumping and trespass are not occurring, and you know, a lot of these lands occur at the urban interface, so they're visible to surrounding landowners. We want to make sure that the properties are cared for, and the additional staff. Oh, sorry, Tom.
Let me jump in terms of kind of a big picture, so that when we have this conversation in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, you will not say, I didn't warn you. Our management costs are going to go up over time. And when we started this endeavor, we didn't own any land. So for those of you that have been a part of this commission for a while, you know that our meetings were dominated by acquiring property. And the property we are acquiring, as Mr. Gardner knows, are in some pretty challenging areas related to dumping and off-road vehicle use. And as we acquire these properties, managing them is going to be critical. And I think most of you know I have a prejudice for one thing, and that is using independent contractors as much as possible and not, frankly, staffing up. Mm-hmm. But we do need some core competencies within the organization. And over the next 40 years, our management and monitoring cost will likely increase, and our land acquisition cost will, of course, decrease. We have a target of about 100,000 acres we've got to buy. And once we finish that job, acquisition efforts stop, and we have to manage 100,000 plus acres. So this is a part of the game plan, and we'll probably come back to you again in 5 years or 10 years and suggest changes again to the structure of how we manage the properties.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Other questions? All right, and we do have a finance committee that will be looking at the entire budget to be proposed that will be coming back as well. If there are no other questions or comments, I'll entertain a motion to approve the increase.
So moved, Madam Chair, Supervisor Perez. Thank you.
Thank you. District second, 4.
Second, District 3.
Jan Harnick, second from District 3. All those in favor, please say aye. Wiggle some fingers.
Aye.
Do we still have Elaine on? I don't see her. Okay. She may not. Trisha, I'm not sure if you're seeing her.
I don't think any of us see her. We'll let the record note that Elaine Holmes has left the meeting.
Okay. And it looks like no opposition. Seeing none, that motion will pass unanimously. Very good. Okay. That does conclude our action items. We've got information section. If there's not any questions or comments on it, just to note, there's adjustment for the mitigation fee there. Of course, our unaudited financials and investment report based on our approval to allow Tom to approve contracts $25,000 and below. The finance committee had made a recommendation that on a regular basis, those are provided to us. So we see what he is approving for under $25,000 since they're still being used with budget money. So that is listed there as well. And any other public comments, Tricia, that have come in as a result of our meeting and discussion?
We did not get any emailed comments on non-agenda items. And at this time, there are no hands raised.
Great.
And Chair, if I just might announce, I had trouble logging into our own CVAG managed meeting. And some of you did too. For those of you that are on the energy and environment, you just may want to try logging in a little bit early. And if that last email that you receive, probably in the last half an hour or 45 minutes, if the link doesn't work, go to our website and just log in publicly, and we will promote you to what's called a panelist, like you are on this meeting. So give it a few minutes. We're having some challenges with Zoom and, frankly, Microsoft this week in our office, and hopefully you all are making do with your own offices and computers as well.
Great. Thank you for that, Tom. Yeah, I use the one that just says, you know, this is your own unique password that was sent a few days ago. That seemed to work.
I think Mayor Kelly was raising her hand.
Okay.
She disappeared on me.
All right. And Kathleen Fitzpatrick, you're muted, but did you have a comment?
No, I think Kathleen was waving goodbye.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Well, we do have an upcoming meeting on June 10th, still at 10:30. And with that, we will adjourn. And for those, thank you for your service on this commission. Rita, do you have a question or comment?
No, I don't. I just say you run a great meeting. Thank you.
Well, team effort. I wait. Are you on the next one? We're going over goals and objectives.
No.
Okay. That was a lively one last time. It was a very good discussion, but it went over. But but we will be logging on for those on E&E at 12 o'clock. And I know we do have a public comment on that as well as some input. So I've heard from a few of those committee members already about our goals and objectives really surrounding the Salton Sea. But thank you for your work on the commission again. Thank you for the CVAG, CVCC staff, and Katie for our fence accomplishments. And with that, we are 11:27 and we'll call it adjourned.
Congratulations, okay. La Quinta and the sheep.
Yay.
See you all later. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too, Gary.